Welcome to the Top Gear Magazine podcast, a peek behind the curtain of what it's really like to drive other people's cars for a living. These are the stories behind the stories. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Top Gear Magazine podcast. I'm Jack Ricks, joined by Ollie Marriage.
Hello, Jack.
Hello, Ollie. Sorry.
Hello.
Didn't return the favour there. Ollie Q.
Bonjour, Jack.
Oh, wasn't expecting that.
You went full French straight away.
Well, we've got a slightly French subject today, so I thought I'd get in there.
Yeah,
we do. Nice. Yes, so today we're going to be talking about the fact that I've been bleeding.
I've been bleeding
profusely.
All right, what listeners don't know is that before we started recording, we had a bet that we wouldn't try and do like 5 minutes of straight puns, and we didn't even get 15 seconds in without Jack going bullied.
I saw it as a challenge, not a bet that we wouldn't do it.
Anyway, bleeding.
Yeah, so I've been bleeding, which we will come into. This is the Bugatti bleed.
Is that how it's pronounced?
I think
not
so.
Not Bolliday.
Going on your Bollidays.
Anywhere nice on your Bollidays.
Bolide.
Oh, well.
Bolide. That's quite the American pronunciation.
Yeah, that'd be hey, you're doing that boogity Bolide.
We've got options. I mean, if it's not pronounced Bolide, then I've said it wrong for an entire YouTube video.
That never comes back to bite you in the backside. So the man who did, got 5 million views talking about a Hyundai and enraged all of South Korea.
Yeah. In fact, was that what made Hyundai make it official? You know, they put out the press release recently.
They did a whole advertising campaign saying it's Hyundai.
It's Hyundai. This is how you pronounce it. That's the name globally.
Because of me going, Hyundai.
Yeah.
Putting too many syllables into it.
So, the Bolide, the Bleed, the Bolliday, whatever you want to call it. If you don't know what this is, I think I described it as the answer to the best ever pub question in the world. What would happen if you took the powertrain from a Bugatti Chiron and then put it in a kind of bespoke, stripped down, quite lightweight, we'll talk about that in a minute, track only hypercar?
It's nice. Yeah. I mean, I always thought the best ever pub question is, would you rather fight one duck-sized horse or 20 duck-sized horses.
But or as my four-year-old
sized ducks,
but my four-year-old asked me quite often, Dad, what would win the fight, a bear or a shark? Tricky one, that.
Tricky one.
We could do a whole other podcast on that one.
Depends on the terrain.
Well, no, I said, it depends whether is it on land or sea.
So this is the best car-themed pub question, isn't it?
Yeah. There we go.
I thought it was a fiction when they announced it back in 2020.
Because there's so many renderings these days, aren't there? The ultimate this, or what if they built that? You kind of can't tell fact from not. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, they are going to put a Chiron Supersport engine in effectively a kind of track spec Le Mans prototype.
Seems to be a WEC prototype.
I'm with you. I thought it was because they obviously did a Gran Turismo Vision car that actually previewed the Chiron. Do you remember that? It was a sort of Chiron with the big, huge wings and just sort of overblown bodywork, which actually, once we had sort of picked our jaws up off the floor, look, that's just the Chiron under there. It was quite clever. But then when we saw this, again, we went, oh, it's just a sort of a fantasy concept vision of what could be. They're never going to bother to engineer that thing because that's going to need to be...
Because the numbers were just insane.
Yeah.
And as you said, it was the weight.
Yeah.
It was the fact they said it's going to be 1,200 and something kilos. 1,200 kilos?
Yeah, 1,250.
Chiron's a two-ton car. How are you doing that?
Yeah, so at that point, it was, the target was 1,250. I also think they were imagining a kind of top speed car. So the Chiron Supersport had obviously done 300 mile an hour plus. And they were like, oh, but if you strip out weight and have the same amount of power and make it streamlined and lower and, you know, we could easily eclipse that. And then at some point during the development, probably at the point where they realized that wasn't 1250, especially wasn't very feasible, seeing as the engine itself, the powertrain rather, is about 600 kilograms with fluids. So you don't have much to play with once you've got that in there. Then it kind of morphed, the project morphed into being, well, how about we make the kind of ultimate high downforce track kind of monster, if you like, which I think is a much better decision because, you know, why go after top speeds? The Chiron's done that. And actually this idea of a Bugatti track car is something new.
Let's take the 600 kilo engine and make it go around corners as quickly as possible.
No, but that's what makes it so cool. That's what makes it so cool. So these track-only hypercars, there's plenty of them around these days. And they all have Well, not, well, I suppose you look at like the Valkyrie AMR Pro, very highly strung, high revving V12. That would seem quite suited to a to a track application, same as the Pagani Huayra R.
Yeah.
You know, and then suddenly this sort of, I think the rev limit's, it's a little over 7,000 RPM.
Okay.
Like bucket loads of torque. You got four turbos to spin up on this behemoth of an engine. It's like, it's thirsty, it's heavy, it's inherently laggy. They've taken out the sequential turbocharging system. So on the Chiron, you get max torque at 2,000 RPM. Here, it's just like, you know, four turbos, they all spin up, so you get it at 4,000 RPM. But the idea being, it's a car designed to operate in a very narrow window. So, you know, it's designed to work when you're flat out going around a track and everything else can just go away.
I just love the idea that there's a billionaire somewhere going, like, I just really miss the turbo lag I used to have in my, like, Sierra Cosi in the 80s. The Bugatti have gone, no problem. We've got this.
But I have to say, I'm saying lag. It's lag isn't a word. There's a brief, the briefest of pauses while the engine sort of fills its lungs and then you're off because you've got, you know, 500, 550 kilograms less than a Chiron, same amount of power, same amount of torque. It's not slow. This thing.
So it is not, there's no trace of a Chiron underneath it, though. It's not a Chiron chassis or anything, is it? It's just that powertrain shoved in something bespoke.
It's totally not like that bespoke carbon monocoque
Devo thing they did a while ago, which was kind of a trackier Chiron.
Chiron. So this is
it's not even got headlights, has it?
No. So everything about it is track only.
It's an exquisite looking thing. I mean, it's just as a piece of sculpture, it is what you'd want the ultimate Bugatti W16 hypercar to look like. It's so skeletal and angry and insectile looking at the back. It's all exposed, which I guess it have to be. I mean, how do you keep that engine cool?
Yeah.
It's mad.
I agree. I think I said when I was writing it up for the magazine, the feature, it was like the designers and the engineers both won the argument because you sort of think, well, surely the designers, it's like a race to go first. The engineer's like, quick, sketch it up. Give the give the design department the hard points and the package. Yeah. Meanwhile, the design department's like, sod that. Right, this is what we want it to look like.
Yeah.
But somehow it all came together and it does look stunning. Yeah. Stunning, this thing.
So what's it like then?
Well,
you can tell us.
I'm going to tell you. So what I actually did, so just to give you a bit more context on what the opportunity was and what happened. So this was the Bugatti Balide's final ever testing session. The car's finished. The software's frozen. The hardware is frozen. So we were invited to Nardo, the proving ground in the south of Italy, for basically the final test session. They didn't have a lot to do, the engineers, just a final little bits and bobs to wrap everything up. And we were invited to go for a passenger ride with Andy Wallace.
Yeah, he knows what he's about. That's all right.
Le Mans winner, the man who drove the Chiron Supersport to 304.7 miles an hour.
The man who probably one of the bravest parts of his job isn't doing 300 miles an hour.
Oh, no.
It's putting new Bugatti customers, introducing them to their new purchase and teaching them how it works.
Sitting in the passenger seat.
Yeah. So he didn't have to sit in the passenger seat with me. I had to sit in the passenger seat with him.
Which we should say, normally we try and avoid, don't we? Normally we're not really interested in passenger ride stories because they're just, you're constantly just wishing you're in the driver's seat. Mm. But
how much can you actually tell? Well,
I wonder if you were wishing you were in the driver's seat or not for this one, Jack, because it sounded pretty stomach churning.
No, I'm always wishing I was driving, and this one particularly because I was feeling sick as a dog from the forces that I was being exerted to. But, you know, with this car, it's so extreme in its performance that, yes, there is something to experience from the passenger seat, but also there's not a whole lot that's known about it, really. You know, they've put out various press releases over the last couple of years, you know, saying, oh, it's got very special carbon Brembo brakes because it needs to if it's going to be that quick and weigh 1600 kilograms.
Hang on, that's ballooned a bit. Said 1200 a minute.
1250
ago.
was the original target. It's 1450 dry, now 1600 with fluids.
Okay, so it's heavy for a track special, but light for a W16 quad turbo hypercar.
Exactly. You just need to shift your lens slightly. But yes, there was lots and lots to learn. And the opportunity to get to chat to Andy, who's sort of taken that car from initial sort of concept all the way to to here to being finished. But also the whole engineering team was there, the head of engineering was there. And it was just fascinating talking to them about this very special project that they just loved working on. And they're building the first cars now.
They're 40 being built?
40 being built, £3.5 million each.
Oh, yeah.
The first couple, I think the first one's a kind of pre-series car that Bugatti will keep for itself. Mm. And the other one is being built for the boss. The new boss.
Ah, Matej
Rimac.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, pulling rank.
I'm sure we'll come back to all the numbers on the cars and stuff in a moment and how that felt. But I'm interested in the people. Mm. Are they a bit kind of D-mob happy now? Because this is the end of the W16 era, isn't it? They're now going to work in on the V16 car. This is like the end of that whole Veyron, Chiron bloodline. So were they all kind of popping open the beers and the champagne, or
there was no alcohol.
Letting the hair down?
There was no alcohol. I think they were a little bit.
They relaxed.
I'm sort of talking to the head of engineering and sort of how does it work? What do you move on to next?
How do you follow this?
Well, for him, it's the Mistral. So getting the Bugatti Mistral over the line.
That's the convertible version. Speedstery one.
Yeah. So they need to do the final bits on that and get that into production. And then they basically have a perfect cadence. So, you know, after that would come the Chiron successor. But if there's any delays in that project and we find ourselves with 6 months free, then maybe there's another little fun project that we could squeeze in there. But really, yeah, it's like a jigsaw piece. Like, you know, they're all available.
Yeah.
This team that tests these cars to destruction and sets them up beautifully, and then another team takes over and actually puts them through production. And they're just trying to sort of join all these pieces, make sure there's no downtime for anyone. And we'll see.
Definitely not popping the champagne then.
So no, I would rather take you through the whole experience and all the numbers and everything else. But actually, I got the mic out at Nardo because I thought it'd be quite fun to talk about the experience while my hands were literally still shaking and my gut was still in knots from doing about 15 full bore launches. It was actually the braking that made you feel sick.
Yeah.
And
were you on slicks?
No. We were on, initially we weren't on slicks, and then we got over to the track, and there's what they called a tire oven.
Yep.
Perfect. Fantastic. And we had a set of slicks cooking away in there. So yeah, from the moment we pulled out, it was just full bore. So yeah.
Were you not wondering why Jack's 6'7" now? it's the G-force, isn't it?
In the video, you'll see from the onboard cameras, I should have probably tightened my harness a little bit. Although I blame the crew who were sort of fiddling around with my harness for me, because it could have been tighter. When Andy slams on the brakes, I fly forward,
face plant
like some sort of rag doll, and I think that may have contributed to my nausea.
I look forward to watching that. That's going to be my new favourite Jack being scared on camera moment after that moment in the Hennessy Venom when you realise you're running out of runway.
Oh, and add that to the Jeep Wrangler in Utah.
Oh, the Jeep Wrangler where you nearly fell off a canyon. And the other moment in a Bugatti where you nearly span out a Chiron Super Sport
the
ring.
You have on the Nürburgring in the rain.
There's a lot of near-death experiences on the Top Gear YouTube channel involving you.
If you're not living on the edge of taking up too much space. That's my motto. I recorded in the garage. You can hear a lot of noises going on in the background, various wheel guns going off, and you might even hear the car firing up in the background. But I wanted to give you some of that sort of real atmosphere and that real kind of real-time reaction while the blood was still pumping on the day. So should we go across to Nardo?
Let's go to you.
Yeah?
Let's do it.
Live-ish. Here's Jack Ricks. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Top Gear Magazine podcast and to the Nardo Proving Ground in the south of Italy. Top secret place, this. This is very secret access that we got to this place. There are all sorts of camouflaged mules driving around, next-gen cars from all sorts of car manufacturers that come here to develop their cars, to test them out. We are under strict instructions on the pain of death that we can't take any photos. They put the stickers all over our phones. They've made us sign all sorts of bits of paper that were in Italian, so I don't actually understand what they said, promising that we're not going to get any video or photos of anyone else's car. But do you know what? I don't really care, because what we are allowed to film today and to photograph and to talk about is pretty much the most exciting car on the planet. I'm just going to go ahead and say it, because as you can hear from the chatter and the echo as my voice changes slightly as I walk into the garage area, we are here with Bugatti, and we are here for a world exclusive opportunity. We are the first people outside of the company to spend some time with the track only Bugatti Bolide and to get a passenger ride, to experience it in full flight with Bugatti's chief test driver and racing legend, Andy Wallace. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, because we've just got back from one of the test tracks they got here. I think it's called Dynamic Platform A, which is pretty unsexy, isn't it? So we've been for a passenger ride in the car. I have experienced the full force of this thing. But why don't I start by just explaining a little bit about what it is? Well, the Bugatti Bolide is kind of the answer to the greatest pub question that ever existed, isn't it? What would happen if you took the W16, the legendary W16 powertrain from a Bugatti Chiron, and then wrapped it in a track-only, lightweight hypercar? What would that be like? It's essentially a Bugatti race car that normal customers can buy. The Bolide is the answer to that question. I'll be honest, they showed a concept a while ago, and then they confirmed it for production, I think it was in 2021. And up until that point in 2021, I didn't really think they were serious. I didn't think they were going to put this into production. I thought they were just messing around with this idea of what would a more lightweight Bugatti be like. But they've only gone and done it. And when Matej Rimac took over the company, this was obviously on his to-do list. Should we push on with the Bugatti Bolide? And, well, I couldn't be happier that he pushed the green light on this one, because this car is just wild, wild, wild. There's a lot of these track-only hypercars around at the moment. You've got stuff like the Gordon Murray T50S, designed to only be used on track for the committed and very well-heeled track enthusiast. But the Bolide is just, it's just on another level, because at its heart is the engine, the W16 engine that we're quite familiar with from the Chiron. So 8 litres, quad turbo, W16 engine. In this car here, it produces the same amount of power as you get in a Chiron Supersport. So it's about 1,580 brake horsepower odd, which is enough to be getting on with. It's over 1,100 pounds-feet of torque as well. Slightly different in this car, that the quad turbos are always on. There's sequential turbos in the Chiron, so you get more torque at lower revs and make it more sort of tractable to drive around at lower speeds. In this one, you need to be above 4,000 RPM to get the full hit of the four turbos, but it's a racing car. It's designed to operate in this very narrow window because it's a track car. They don't need to mess about with stuff like, can it handle going through a McDonald's drive-through, or, you know, can it be parked up for months on the drive while you sun yourself in the French Riviera? It's got one purpose in life, and that is to look stupendous, sound very naughty indeed, and go around a racetrack as quickly as possible. And as with all Bugattis, this thing is just a fact fest. So there were just so many stats about this car that are mind-blowing. The engine, well, I've already covered that. 1,100 horsepower per tonne, over 1,100 horsepower per tonne. And the best way that I could get my head around that, if you think an Alpine A110 weighs about a tonne, well, imagine an Alpine A110 with 1,100 horsepower. How bonkers, how mental would that be? Well, that's the power-to-rate ratio that we're talking about here. If we talk about aerodynamics, so there's no active aero on this car. It's got fixed front splitter, fixed rear wing, but at the top speed of about 237 miles an hour, it's producing, near as damn it, 3 tonnes of downforce, so over twice
its actual weight in downforce, which, I mean, that's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous amounts of downforce, isn't it? In terms of weight, it weighs 1,450 kilograms, about 500 kilograms less than a Bugatti Chiron. Not surprising, because you don't have to worry about any of the things that make the Bugatti Chiron so comfortable and plush and usable as a road car. You can just lob those all out the window and make this as light and as fast as possible. It is an all-new monocoque. So if you look inside the Bolide, you won't find a single piece of switchgear or componentry from the Chiron. It is all new, same with the bodywork. There is no carryover. I mean, when you make a car that costs £3.5 million, as the Bolide does, and they're only building 40 of them, by the way, you can afford to go down the bespoke route. I think it's fair to say. In terms of that carbon monocoque, so there's a fantastic picture that Bugatti released online. You've got to go and have a look at it. It's a really compact kind of teardrop shape with this nose cone poking out the front and these super wide tyres exposed. It looks like some sort of mad hot rod from the future before they put all the bodywork on top of it. And I'm a big fan. I think there's definite scope there for a sort of follow-up variant of the Bolide. But it's super stiff. It's built to FIA, LMDH. That's the sort of top tier of Le Mans safety standards. It's so stiff. So there's a test when it comes to the stiffness of the chassis, where they put 7.5 tons of force through the A-pillar, and the chassis is only allowed to deflect by 50 millimetres. So I'll let you sort of play around with your fingers and sort of see how little 50 millimetres is and imagine how heavy 7.5 tons is. It's very, very stiff indeed. What else can we talk about? The wheels, so they're Michelin slicks. When we went out onto the track earlier, and trust me, I am going to get to that bit, they were sitting in an oven baking for us, so they were at the perfect temperature when we stuck the tyres on. The suspension, it's pushrod suspension. You've got these sort of inboard horizontal dampers. It all looks absolutely gorgeous. The suspension arms are 3D printed. I think I read somewhere that one of them weighs 100 grams, but can take 3.7 tons of force through them. And that's sort of the benefits of 3D printing, because you've got this incredible internal structure that can take all this force whilst being very lightweight. Essentially, if an exotic material or an engineering solution exists on planet Earth, regardless of the cost, it's gone into this car. It's a true no-compromise car. And then when you get into the interior, it's proper race car stuff. So the seating position is way more reclined than you get in a Chiron. Your heels are probably something like the same height as your bum. The seats aren't seats at all. They're just pads attached directly to the carbon monocoque, and then you adjust the steering wheel and the pedals to make it fit. You can remove the steering wheel to make getting in and out a little bit easier, although we didn't actually need to because I'm so small and slim. And then part of the padding, part of the headrest padding and the padding for your sides is actually attached to the door. So when the door swings up and open, the padding goes with it. And then when you shut it down, you're fully enclosed by all this padding around you. It's absolutely incredible place to be. Very, very snug. But then, of course, a car that's capable of this sort of performance, you want to be held snugly by your seat. So that all makes plenty of sense. And then in front of you, you've got this wheel. It sort of looks like one of those farfalle pasta bits. I suppose it's a yoke, but, you know, whereas on a Tesla Cybertruck or, a Model S, it's pretty unacceptable because it just makes the whole idea of steering a car around much more difficult. Here, well, it's a race car. And that is race car tech, and that's what race cars have on them, because you have your hands on the wheel at all times. And the wheel itself has all the controls that you need on it, traction control, ABS. The brakes on this thing, by the way, carbon brakes. They have, Brembo have developed the world's largest front, 8-piston front calipers for these carbon-carbon brakes. Carbon-carbon, by the way, so does not work well at low speeds, but has a much, much higher ceiling. Andy Wallace told me that he was doing some runs the other day from Vmax all the way down to zero, and the discs probably got up to 1,000 degrees Celsius. And they were absolutely fine and still working fine. So that gives you an idea of the tech that's in this, that's in these brakes. So that's the sort of headlines. That's the technology around the car. And then we got to go out on track. Now, Andy Wallace is a very calm, gently spoken man. Of course, an unbelievable driver. And he makes very violent manoeuvres look very, very laid back. So the first thing we did, warm tyres on the car, straight out onto the track, bam, launch control. And the launch control works fantastically on this car. So there was a little bit of tyre squirm at the beginning, and then it hooks up, and then you are just gone. So the upshifts, it's got automatic upshifts. The idea behind that is it's going to time those upshifts better than you can do. The car knows when it needs to upshift and will just keep that wall of torque and acceleration coming and coming and coming. And the acceleration, so how do I describe this without using well-worn adjectives? The best way I can describe it is the Bugatti DNA is in there. So if you've ever been in a Chiron or a Veyron, or you've been lucky enough to drive one of these cars, then the engine, of course, dominates the experience. But it's not like other supercar engines that are kind of zingier and revvier and more screechy and high-pitched and highly strung. This is a very sort of low, rumbly, torquey engine, and you've still got that character in this car. The difference here is because it weighs so much less, because you've got so much more grip from those slicks, it hooks up quicker, and the way it fires itself at the horizon is on another level to a Chiron. I mean, that's a phrase in itself that sounds absolutely bonkers. So it's violent. And then when you get to the point at about, I'm guessing here because I couldn't see the speedometer, 100, 150 miles an hour, the point at which you would normally expect a car to start running out of acceleration, start running out of puff, it seems to just kick again. It finds a second wind and then accelerates again. And that's what your brain, or my puny brain at least, can't really compute. It's of quite a violent experience. And then, of course, Andy, without fail, every time got to the end of the straight on this dynamic platform, which is essentially a very long straight, a big skid pan, and then another long straight coming off at a right angle. Every time I thought it was going to crash. I thought, we're carrying too much speed, we're accelerating too hard. Then he would stand on the brakes. My internal organs would thrust themselves towards the front of my body in a very uncomfortable manner, and we would always stop with plenty and plenty of room to spare, which just shows that I'm a complete wuss when it comes to braking. And this car has supernatural braking abilities. So we did a bit of that. We did a bit of driving around on the skid pan. The lateral acceleration, I think I read it can handle 2.5G, maybe 2.8G in lateral acceleration. Honestly, we didn't get anywhere near to breaching the lateral grip. It is just stuck to the road, absolutely stuck to the road. And if I'm honest, I think the limitations of my fleshy human body would run out way before we found the car's limits, because after about 10 minutes, I was feeling pretty sick. Yep, I was pretty convinced at one point that I was going to chunder all over this £3.5 million Bugatti Bolide test car, at which point I had a sort of soothing thought as we were filming video at the time, and I thought, do you know what? Yes, this is going to be embarrassing, and yes, it's going to be entirely unpleasant, but it would be quite a funny part to add to our video. So that is the length I'm prepared to go to, people, for Top Gear's YouTube videos. Fortunately, I kept my breakfast down. This being Italy, there wasn't much to keep down. I think it was three very black, very strong espressos that I had for breakfast, but I managed to keep it down. Andy Wallace did have some sympathy for me. He totally agrees. The forces are insane, and he's had to do a few passenger rides with people that he's been training, not customers yet, but other people within the company that he's been training how to drive the car. And he said, yeah, within about 10 minutes, I was feeling queasy as well. So there we go. It's not just me being a wuss. But what an incredible experience. I mean, philosophically, I get that a lot of people will look at this car and go, look, it's £3.5 million. They're only building 40 of them. You can only drive it on the track. It's even more pointless than a Chiron or any of the other hypercars, an AMG One or anything like that. And at least those you can drive to the supermarket. And I get it. I do get that. On a sort of philosophical level, you can write this car off. But it's a different set of parameters. It's a different set of challenges and engineering rules that Bugatti set themselves. All silly supercar projects start with this sort of what if question. And I started with it here, didn't I? What if Bugatti was to take its mighty W16 engine and put it in a much lighter track-only car? Well, this is the answer. And honestly, if you're the type of person that can afford a £3.5 million car and you like driving around on track, and you like to have, you know, the ultimate show-off piece, well, the Bugatti Bolide has to be that. It has to be. It sounds insane. The engine is such a special piece of engineering, but then the rest of it, it's so thoroughly done. This isn't a rush job. It's not sticking that engine in a carbon shell and a big wing on the back and being done with it. This is a properly sorted race car. You are buying a car that, I asked Andy earlier, I said, look, where would this be next to a modern F1 car? And he said, well, look, around a lap of Silverstone, of course, it's going to be a few seconds behind. But at the end of the straights, you're going to be doing a hell of a lot more mph than the F1 car. So there we go. Bragging rights if you're a Bolide owner. It's an insane thing. I love it. It looks mental. Everything about the design is driven by function. So the way the air flows over the car, the downforce at the front, balancing the downforce at the back, the roof scoop that feeds air into the engine. It's all designed to make this thing work, to make it not overheat, to make the performance repeatable, to give it durability and all of that. But still, what they've ended up with is an utterly insane looking hypercar that I think is proper bedroom wall poster stuff. And I know you're supposed to have posters when you're a teenager, not when you're a sad 39-year-old man, but hey, I want a poster of the Bugatti Bolide on my bedroom wall, and I've been for a ride in it. Who knows, one day they might even let me drive it. So on that note, I'm going to go off and find Andy and other Bugatti bosses and try and butter them up a bit. See you in a bit. Hope that was fun. Bye, guys. Thank you for listening to the Top Gear Magazine podcast. Hope you enjoyed that. And don't forget to subscribe, to leave us a review, to leave us a star rating.
But also check out what is in the rest of the feed, because as well as interviews, we've got our monthly behind the curtain look into the issues that we make. And also, there's some new audio tidbits coming. So, like Jet says, subscribe.